This is Out of School, the podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears and I'm joined again by Bradley Chambers. And tonight we are, in fact, broadcasting halfway from Africa. Bradley's still in the US, but I am in South Africa tonight, broadcasting from my hotel room. But we have two sponsors on the show tonight. One is the Casper Suite from Jamf Software, our good friends at Jamf. And the other sponsor is the Stop Getting IT Wrong book. We'll tell you more about both of those as the show goes on. So good evening, Bradley. How are you?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going okay. It's been a very intense week out here, but I'm nearly done. Nearly done.
How long of a flight home is it for you?
Well, it's going to be about 10 and a half hours from Johannesburg to London, and then it's going to be another hour from London to Glasgow. So I'm flying out, we're talking on Thursday evening, I'm flying out Friday evening about 8 o'clock, and I'll be home by about noon the day after.
Nice, nice. Well, it's always exhausting traveling because it's just kind of you go, 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 and I never sleep well when I'm like in a hotel either.
Yeah, no, I started off not sleeping very well, and then as I've gotten more tired as the trip's gone on, sleeping hasn't been a problem after that.
So have you been talking basically your one-to-one deployment and technology talks?
Yeah, it's been very interesting. I was invited down here by a company called Core Group, which is the Apple distributor for essentially the whole of Africa. And they asked me to do a series of presentations at different events they'd organized. So I spoke to the South African Association of Heads of Independent Schools, which is a sort of major conference for head teachers, and then also the equivalent conference for deputy head teachers as well. And then there was a number of events that were organized by Core Group, both in Johannesburg and in Cape Town. I basically did three different presentations. One was just our story about iPads, the kind of thing we talk about every week on the show. And then I did another couple of presentations. One was, I only did it once, which was, it was called The Theory of Device Selection. And what that was doing, it was a really fun talk to do and to write, because what it was doing was basically explaining to head teachers what's happening in computers now and how it's different from what's been happening with PCs and Macs for years and years, and they're sort of familiar with that battlefront, but trying to explain how it's changed. So that was an interesting talk. And then I did another one which was specifically about the IT aspects of deployment, so it was essentially like the live version of this podcast. And our friend Alan Goldberg, who listens to us from South Africa, Cape Town, he was the he works for DigiCape down there, and he was hosting me in Cape Town for a couple of days. And he made an important point of saying, if you like this, you'll love the podcast. So hopefully we'll pick up a few listeners, and thanks, Alan, for that. I'm sure he's listening in his car on the way to through some traffic in Cape Town.
I'm just really hopeful that somebody will bring you to the US at some point, and then we can do a live show one day.
That would be good fun. That would be good fun. Yeah, we should try and set that up. So if anybody in America is listening, I don't know if we have any listeners in America, do we?
Maybe. Well, I know, my wife doesn't listen, so that's a...
That's our target market lost already. But yeah, that would be nice. And it's been a real education being out here as well. I mean, the time that I was growing up, South Africa wasn't a country that people really talked about in polite society, and for obvious reasons, but I think what I've kind of come to realize is my complete ignorance about the place and not really knowing very much about it at all, or why things are the way they are, or why things were the way they were. And just meeting so many people this week and talking to them and, you know, sort of hearing their life stories and their backstories has been absolutely fascinating. I mean, aside from all the educational stuff that we've done, just meeting so many people from this area has been a real education.
Well, I know you'll be glad to get home. I'm sure your wife is as well.
Yes, she's been sending me some pictures, which has been wonderful. And of course, FaceTime is such a fantastic tool for trips like this, because you don't have to set a time. You don't have to, get everybody logged in and then, do the Skype thing. You can just make a call and see your kids. It's fantastic.
Well, good. Well, glad. I mean, we have open house tonight at our school, so that's okay. It's gonna be a late night for us. So my wife, I'm sure, will appreciate me not being at home for 12 hours. But yeah, it is the life.
It's the life. It is.
So I guess before we get started, let's go ahead and thank our first sponsor, our good friends at Jamp Software. Actually, it was a luncheon today with some folks from Arrowhive. We're talking Editor 11 AC and kind of how that impacts our, you know, our networks and things like that. And they obviously talked a lot about Jamp and some of the great things they do for iPad deployment. So, you know, Jamp provides ICT staff with enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technologies in education organizations. Now with Casper Focus, they have placed these powerful technologies directly into the hands of teachers that work with students every day. This is not something that just that IT people use. Casper Focus is meant for teachers to use to unlock the full potential of the iPad in the classrooms by ensuring that all students are engaged on the same activity and using their iOS devices the way technology was intended. Learn more at jampsoftware.com. That's jamfsoftware.com. We'll have a link to the show notes if you want to click on that at outschool.net. But, you know, again, it's one of those things we were talking today and talking about all the pieces of the puzzle that you need to make your Apple deployment work, which is top-notch Wi-Fi, an MDM system that works for you. And, of course, everybody there was just really talking up Jamps and the Casper suite. One of the things that's always really impressed me with Jamp is their Apple focus. You know, Apple customers aren't a second-class citizen to them. They're the first class. And that's absolutely one of the things I really, really like about that company. So that's jampsoftware.com.
Awesome. Yes, we've certainly been talking a lot about MDM while we've been out here as well. I've been very interestingly surprised by just how advanced some of the schools out here are. I don't mean that in any derogatory way at all. It's just that most schools in most countries are sort of like, well, they're still at the stage of iPad. I don't really understand that. Whereas I've been very impressed with the quality of the audiences out here that have come to hear me speak bring their questions and have a discussion. And one of the big topics has been questions like that. How do you keep kids on task? How do you manage apps? And of course, in South Africa, they don't have volume purchase program yet. So that's been an interesting conversation to have as well, to kind of step back into that world and try and solve problems at large scale for people without necessarily all the tools that they need.
Yeah, you just always think that, you know, what you have, everybody else has, and they don't often do. And so you do have to kind of change your strategy based on the environment.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, and you've got to make it fit for the people who need that solution. And of course, while I was here, the big Apple announcement happened. So Apple had their event. What did you think of that, Bradley?
You know, it's funny. I'm getting to the place with iPhones that I do, like I am with the Mac, and I guess really the iPad 2, where when the iPad 2 or the iPad 3 came out, I thought, like, I have to have the iPad 3. But this felt like the first year that I wasn't, like, thinking, I've got to have this new iPhone. And it's not that it's not an incredible phone. The iPhone 5S looks absolutely incredible. The iPhone 5C looks absolutely incredible. But so much to me of what makes the iPhone so great is iOS. And I'm already running, you know, the gold master of iOS 7, had been for a while, and it's absolutely fantastic. The GM is rock solid on the iPhone. And so while, again, I'm not getting the phone, like if I was due to get an upgrade, I would. I'm not eligible, so I'd have to pay like $450 to buy it. And then for me, it's just not worth it. But again, I think if you're eligible for a new phone, I think it's a no-brainer. The problem I'm running into, I was trying to think, like, if I was eligible, is which phone would I get? Because, like, I love the 5S, and, like, I, you know, obviously that's a powerful phone, but I really like the look of the 5C. And then I got to thinking, this is the same conundrum I had back in the iPod days, is I wanted, like, the iPod with all the storage, but I wanted, like, the form factor and the colors of the Nanos.
Yes. It's very much in that vein, isn't it? Now, do you have an iPhone 5 just now?
I do. I got the iPhone. My first iPhone was the 3G. I skipped the 3GS. I got the 4. I got the 4S due to an insurance thing. And then I basically bought the 4S out of contract, and I got the 5, and I've got a year left on my contract. It's funny, my iPhone headphones, like one of the earbuds, is like not as loud as the other one. So I logged in today to like basically set up a repair, and I have like 7 days left on my warranty on this iPhone 5.
Perfect timing.
Yeah, well, it's like a good time to swap out those cables. But, you know, again, it's not, you know, the iPhone 5S looks incredible. The fingerprint sensor looks great. The camera obviously looks incredible. Mm-hmm. But so much to me of what I love about my iPhone is about iOS.
Yes, and if you've got an iPhone 5, I mean, I've got the same thing, and it doesn't feel to me like a slow phone or an old phone, even now, a year into it. But I think, I don't know what you think about this, Bradley, but I think that my use of the phone has changed. And I don't know if you feel the same way, but it feels to me now that the phone is basically my podcast player, my camera, and then it's a whole bunch of remote controls for cloud services. So it's got, you know, Kindle on it, Pocket, Tweetbot, RSS reader that's coming from the cloud, email that's obviously syncing from Gmail and so on. And increasingly, less and less of what I do on the smartphone is about having some state on the phone, but it's just being able to access services really quickly. And I think that my mode of use on the iPad is dramatically different, because in there I do have a lot of state that I want to preserve and save. But in some ways, the performance requirements for my phone are less than they've been before, I think. And I mean, John Gruber said this as well, that the iPhone 5 is good enough for everything we can sort of think of to do with a smartphone right now. And that's not to say we won't invent new things in the future, but I think that's partly why the 5C is, you know, people are talking about it as the new mainstream phone, is because that's enough for most people.
No, and I would agree with that. And I really think, like, if you could get the sales numbers from Apple, come Christmas time, the 5C will be the best-selling phone. The kids are going to love the colors. And we've kind of gotten this, and I kind of alluded to that with the Mac earlier, that, you know, like, I have the 2012 MacBook Air. And, like, if my boss said, hey, I'll buy you a brand new one right now, like a brand new MacBook Air, the 2013 model.
Yep.
Obviously, I would take it, but it's not like for me that I feel like my Mac is that old. To me, so much of my Mac is wrapped up in OS X. Yep. So it's kind of like my Mac is good enough. It does what I need it to do. And so I saw somebody tweet it earlier. They said the 5S is kind of like the Retina MacBook Pro, and the 5C is like the MacBook Air. Yeah. And that the 5C is kind of like the phone that everybody will buy. And it largely, I mean, I was worried they were going to cut 5 gigahertz out on the Wi-Fi. And again, if you're not a Wi-Fi nerd, you don't care about that. But I care about that. Like, it is largely the same phone as the iPhone 5 with a better camera. So I just, you know, I would probably get the blue one. But again, like, if I'm signing a 2-year contract, I would probably end up with the 5S. But
yes, you know. I would too. And, you know, particularly when you're going into, you know, 2-year contracts and so on, that there could easily something come along in those years where you wish you had that one. But for me, the thing that made me sort of almost want a 5S right away was I just want a constantly better camera in my smartphone. You know, and I pretty much depend on that camera for everything photographic I want to do. And I just want that to be better as soon as possible, if you know what I mean. But more than that, and I think perhaps more to the focus of our show, is that the most interesting thing to me in the whole thing was the introduction of the A7 processor. And I think that, how can I put it? To my mind, the 5S looks like a testbed for new hardware. You know, 64-bit, a motion coprocessor, all of these things, new camera technology. And I will be very interested to see if, when the new iPads come out in maybe next month, will there be an A7-based iPad? Because there were some rumors on the internet that the A7 was only going to be 30% faster than the A6. And in fact, they're claiming twice as fast. Now, the A6 is really fast. I mean, I've been blown away by the performance of our kids' new fourth-generation iPads at school. And if we can double that again, I mean, you probably saw in the keynote, there was a couple of charts where they basically showed a Moore's Law curve, an exponential growth curve in CPU and graphics performance on iOS devices. And to ride that wave again, to kind of get the same exhilaration that we had years ago with PCs getting faster, but now doing it in these tiny little boxes is fantastic. And I think it's going to be amazing. And there are times and seasons where performance increases change the game. And this feels to me like another one that changes the game. I mean, the A6 did a little bit, but not dreadfully so. And I think partly because it was such a kind of stealthy upgrade on the iPad. But I think the A7, and assuming it comes to the iPad soon, and I hope it does because I'm getting a new iPad, I think there will be unlocked a whole other class of complex applications that you could do in an iPad, because there's now another level of performance there again. And I'm really excited to see what comes out of all of that.
Yeah, you feel like the A7 is almost getting us to, I guess it really does, to desktop class processors.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, some people were already speculating that it might be that the A7 is being prepped as a new processor for the MacBook Air.
Well, and your tweet a few days ago was, you know, it's kind of resonated with me that the 5S is like the 2008 MacBook Air. And you look back to that introduction, and at the time that was like an expensive computer for the money. It had the iPod hard drive. It was slow. It was expensive. But you fast forward 4 to 5 years later, and Wow, that has taken over the industry. And so you just is this like the beginning of the next wave? And especially when you couple that with a 64-bit iOS, which I was blown away by that. You just feel like this can open us up to desktop class applications and not kind of watered down semi-mobile type stuff.
Yes, yes. I haven't quite got my head around the point of 64-bit yet on iOS. I mean, obviously, on desktop computers, the argument was always so you could have more than 4 gigs of RAM, but, you know, these devices don't have, you know, they're not putting 8 gigs into the iPhone 5S, so there's something else. And I haven't quite been able to sit there and think through exactly what that is, but I'll be interested to think it over a bit more. So it bodes well for the iPad line, I think.
I think the 64-bit now doesn't really do a ton for us today.
Yeah.
But you know, you mentioned the we don't have over 4 gigs. But then thinking that the 5S is a test bed, how long is it before we have 4 to 8 gigs in a iPad?
Well, the biggest constraint with putting a lot of RAM into a device is that, well, one, it takes space, but secondly, it takes power to keep those chips up and running. So I think the day could come. And of course, that would make multitasking incredibly smooth on an iOS device if you had a lot of working memory, or you could make your applications much more complex. And I think the question that's been in my mind for a couple of months, if not 6 months or a year, is what's the end game for iOS? Is there somebody at Apple who is really thinking that we could move 40 to 50% of all of our customers to iOS only? And I'm not sure that... I haven't seen much in iOS 7 that really convinces me that that's happening just yet. But I want that to happen. I mean, I want to use iOS only. I would like to have the Adobe Edition that I'm running here on my Mac to record this show. I would like to have that on my iPad. You know, and I would like to have all those things in there. Because I think iOS is such a great operating system. So the question is, you know, does this take us any closer to that vision? Perhaps it does. But of course, 64-bit is critical for a desktop computer because of the memory requirements. So it will be very interesting. I think the next few years could be more interesting than people think. I think there's a wee bit of groundwork and background work being done, and then the next few years could really change things again.
This might be the Snow Leopard hardware. Like it's like the... kind of that maintenance hardware that we're prepping this hardware for the next wave. The iOS 7 and this hardware are prepping us for like the next 5 to 10 years.
Yes, I think that's pretty fair. I agree with that. And of course, you have to get practice with some of this stuff as well, you know. And iOS 7 is obviously a huge release, so I'm not trying to talk it down because there's obviously so much stuff in there. But in some ways, being on Intel... Today is a bit like being on PowerPC in 1995. When you look at if the measurement's not actually just performance, but if the measure is performance per watt, then Intel of this year is kind of like PowerPC of 10 years ago. You know, it's not quite up to the curve and so on. So it would be interesting to see if... I bet there's a version of OS X somewhere in Apple's labs that runs on ARM. If there isn't, they're crazy. I'm sure there is, and because they're not crazy. So we'll see where that goes.
Well, you know, one of the things that was left out that I wrote about on my blog day before yesterday was NOAA 802.11ac in the iPhone 5S. And that was rumored to be in there, especially because the new MacBook Airs have it. And I did some thinking and pondering about, you know, obviously it was left out. So we think, well, why not? Or why was it left out? And I got to thinking because, again, Apple sells and it's not even just that it's in the Airs. They sell a base station that's 802.11 AC. And then I got to thinking about the history. And they've generally, and if you kind of look at the TikTok, and this is a big talk, I'll give you that. I mean, this has got like 64-bit and that touchscreen is a big kind of talk feature. When I say TikTok, I mean like the Tick is a huge revision, is more of a revolution, and then the Talk is an evolution. So iPhone 4 to 4S, iPhone 5 to 5S. And if you look about it, the original iPhone didn't have 3G. The iPhone 4 had no LTE, which a lot of people thought it would. The 4S did. And the iPhone 4S had no 5 gigahertz wireless, but the 5 was the first one. And so it seems like they kind of like hold these communication standards out a year longer than we think. Mm-hmm. And I kind of pondered why, and I came up with kind of three reasons. And again, it could be none of these. The first one was battery life. And, mm-hmm. you know, you had mentioned before, so much about iOS is about battery life. And these new chips, when they come out, always suck more power than their kind of next generation ones will. And again, that's probably largely why we left out LTE for a year, was for battery life. And so the 802.11n chips have been out since 09. It's, the standard was ratified in 09. The chips have been out since probably 2007. So they're probably, they, you know, sip on power rather than drink it. So that's a thought. The second thought I had was about cost. That, you know, the 5C and the 5S are obviously using the same Wi-Fi chip. They have that 2.4 and 5 gigahertz 802.11 A, B, G, N chip. So that's another part, like since they're combining the chips, using one chip for both of those phones, they can kind of get a bulk buy. Then you also wonder, along that same lines, was it that their chip vendor couldn't get them the quantity of the 802.11 AC chip, you know, that they needed? And that could be it. So it could be about like kind of cost slash supply chain issues. The third thing was about size, which, you know, obviously the 5S is roughly the same form factor as the 5. And if that chip isn't as small yet, they would have to find something else to shrink. So, you know, that's, again, that's something that left out. That might be one of the reasons. I'm sure it'll come up in the iPhone 6.
Yeah, because I think that, you know, at the end of the day, is there anybody who's going to walk into a shop to buy an iPhone and then walk out because it doesn't support 802.11ac in 2013-14? And I think the answer is probably no to that.
Right.
I think, you know, because there simply isn't that kind of installed base in people's homes. I mean, these are consumer products. They're not designed as enterprise products, even though the enterprise is using it pretty enthusiastically. So I think, you know, it seems to me that Apple always puts things in once people, they hear that people are not buying it because it doesn't have it in. And it was that way for a lot of enterprise support stuff when they heard that people weren't buying the iPhone 3G because it didn't have, you know, remote wipe for exchange or whatever. They put that into the software or they put it into the hardware or whatever. So I think it is possibly as much a matter of both hardware timing and just market timing as well. That it's not a must-have. And if it's not a must-have, then their space is better used for something else. Like, for example, more battery. I mean, you talked about shrinking other things. I think both the iPhone 5C and the 5S have bigger batteries again than the 5 did, which is, of course, welcome as always, because more battery life is absolutely essential. Always.
No, I agree. And you'll take a little slower Wi-Fi speed, you know, to have better battery. Because, again, I mean, you talked about having largely kind of cloud-based services. Your limit there isn't necessarily the Wi-Fi. It's the speed of your internet at home.
Yeah, yeah. And in countries and backwards towns like mine that don't have LTE yet, even still, you know, those chips are... I mean, I've had, like, I think I might be on my third LTE device without any LTE servers to run it on. So, you know, so get on with that, please.
It's crazy.
Yeah,
20 megs up and down. Of course, that's slower than my home Wi-Fi. I tested the other day, and I only pay for 50 by 50, but I did a speed test and got 60 by 60. Yeah, so that's all I have about the announcements. Other than I agree with your... mentioned that Craig Federighi is the best presenter that Apple has now, which is a drastic change from a few years ago when he was terrible.
Yeah, his first outing for Apple was not the greatest, but he really, you know, he's shone. And people said that with WWDC as well, and I think it's fair to say he is an outstanding presenter.
My wife was watching the keynote, or she was in the room while I was watching it on the Apple TV, and she said that, like, Tim Cook and Phil Schiller seemed very rehearsed. But like that Craig Federighi felt like he was just talking. And yeah. There's an aspect of, obviously for public speaking, you have to rehearse, but the key is to make it like you're not, like you didn't. You know, Steve Jobs always felt like he was just talking off the cuff. It was very rehearsed.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Very much so. Very much so.
Anything else on the announcement?
How'd you like the Caseys? I think they look atrocious, but that's just my taste.
I would not buy one, but I think they will sell like crazy. And I actually made a quip on Twitter that I think Apple will probably make more profit on the cases than Google will make on Android ads, because I'm sure they've got about a nickel in those. And again, knowing, like, just thinking back to the iPod days, people will buy them, and like parents will buy them for Christmas, and they'll buy a case to go with them, and they'll, you know, change the colors, and yeah, they will sell a ton of them. But that's the capitalism for you.
That's business right there.
So you want to take a break for our second sponsor?
Yeah, tell us about that.
So you were gone last week, yep. and had Cole on here when we had this sponsor, and it's a book called Stop Getting IT Wrong. And I really like the premise of it, because it's kind of like it's almost read it like a blog, and I mean that as a compliment. Like, it's a very easy read, a very fun read, and it's written by a teacher. And so the copy that you know they sent to us, I'm going to read it, but I'm just going to tell you, like, it's a great book, and if you're a teacher or you work in this industry, like, you definitely need to read this book. It's really, really inexpensive on Amazon. It's by a guy named David Morgan, who's a great guy. We've emailed back and forth. So the premise of the book is, have you ever wondered if you could be teaching smarter by using the technology you already have to your advantage? Do you feel like you've got a fortune of gadgets sitting around and not actually helping your students learn? Then this book is for you. Stop Getting IT Wrong is a great collection of musings, stories, and strategies about the successful use of digital technology in any classroom at any level. Whether you're a computer science teacher, or you teach dance, or you're in elementary, you're in middle school, or you're in high school, there's something in this book for you. It collects best practices of over 7 years in teaching computers and digital technology every day, brought to you by a passionate teacher. Again, teacher, this is not written by an IT guy. This is written by a teacher who genuinely believes every lesson can be made smarter by using technology we already have at our fingertips. Stop Getting IT Wrong is available from Amazon as a paperback for £9.99 in pounds, or £13.38 in the U.S. Amazon store. And then for Kindle, it's £3 and $4.66 in U.S. dollars. And it's coming soon to the iBook store. It's available at stopgettingitwrong.com, or obviously available on your local Amazon store, and we'll link to that in the show notes. But I've read the book. It was a lot of fun, and I just really love these books that, like, for, like, you know, a couple dollars, you can get the digital copy, and I just really love that. So be a great thing to purchase for the teacher in your life. It's stopgettingitwrong.com.
Awesome. Joe in Britain, you can't gift a Kindle book.
What?
I'm not kidding. It's for three Christmases now, it has said, you can put a Kindle book on your wish list, but nobody can buy it for you. And for years it said, we're working hard to bring Kindle gifting to you for next Christmas.
What's the problem there? Like, what? I don't know.
Lawyers. The problem is always lawyers. Lawyers.
Yeah.
Sorry, any lawyers that are listening, but don't sue me. But yes. Yeah, so I wanted to talk, Bradley, a little bit about a topic that seems to have come up over and over again this week here in South Africa, which is fascinating because it's a topic that I'm sure is being discussed everywhere, and that is the whole idea of bring your own device in schools. And it's an idea that certainly appears to have a certain amount of traction out here with a certain proportion of school leaders and teachers. But a lot of people are still quite unsure about it, and I've been asked about it several times. I've basically been asked about it in the Q&A of every talk I've done so far. What do you think about bring your own device? And I thought maybe what we could do is just lay out exactly what I think about bring your own device here, if that sounds like something people would tune in for.
And if you don't, you can stop right here.
Yep, and there's always the skip button as well.
But please don't.
It's a free show.
That's true.
Yeah, you can have your money back. Speak to my lawyer. So the question, you know, is always, well, there's two questions, right? One is schools who are not sure what they're doing with technology, and they've kind of settled almost by default on bring your own device, because they don't have another strategy, so they're just going with that. And the second situation that I've met quite a lot is schools where a lot of the parents have already bought their child some kind of device and are under some pressure from the parents to let them send those devices to school with their kids. And as a result, people are kind of like, oh, I suppose we better do BYOD then, because everybody says they need to bring their own device. So, you know, people have asked me my opinion about it, and we thought about it pretty hard at Cedars before we did our iPad deployment, but we rejected it for a number of reasons. These are not all the reasons we had at the time. Some of them are, but others have come to light since. And I just want to lay out, you know, there's five big reasons I've been talking about here as to why I think that's not a super idea for schools. And I guess the first really is kind of a slightly esoteric one, which is that essentially all the big players in mobile are lining up for a vertical integration play. And that's not really language that resonates with teachers, but what I mean by that is that, you know, Apple's always been vertical integrated, right? They've always had iOS, iPads, and iCloud, right? They've always been, you know, Apple stuff on Apple's devices talking to Apple's services. And Google obviously, you know, runs in a lot of things, but they are now lined up with the full service stack as well, because you've got Google services, which, yes, they're available on other things, but not necessarily with the same user experience. Obviously, Google's got their own operating system, well, systems in both Android and Chrome OS. And then they've just got themselves their hardware manufacturer with Motorola as well. So there's now a vertical stack there in Google. And Microsoft, as we have talked about in the past, Bradley, is just, you know, they've always had their operating system. They've got their cloud services in place now with things like SkyDrive and Office 365. And now they're trying to make their own tablets with Surface and soon to be Surface 2. So there's a... And of course, Steve Ballmer, before he got the bag, basically said, we're turning into a devices and services company. We're doing an Apple, essentially, but didn't say that word. And it seems to me that, you know, there's almost never been a worse time to try and be cross-platform. Does that make sense? I mean, if you think about our experience with Java, right, with Java, you know, people said, write once, run anywhere, cross-platform apps, and they were basically rubbish everywhere. Slightly less rubbish in Windows, but, you know, they were never pleasant software applications to use ever. And I think what you can end up with in a BYOD situation is you can end up basically having everybody be equally miserable instead of anybody being happy with what they're using. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because ultimately for this stuff to work, it's got to be integrated. And so you're either going to be the integrator or you're going to choose a partner who does the integration for you. So if you decide to pick a little bit of this company, a little bit of that company, like if you're going to say, all right, we're going to use this from Microsoft, use this from Google, use this from Apple, and then get our books from Amazon, like you have to make all that work. Okay. Otherwise, or if you just say we're going all in with Google, then you just go all in and you live and die by what they do. And there's an aspect of that I can get behind on each side, but I just think long term that the vertical integration is kind of the way of the future. And of course, that really leaves out the players in some ways like Dell and HP, who just make crappy hardware with an OS they don't own.
Yes, and you know, of course, potentially like, Samsung as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I really think Samsung is... I blogged about this months ago, but like I really think if you read the press releases from Dell about, like, you know, our PC sales are bad because Windows is bad, you know, Windows 8 is bad, like I really think you could like change the date to 10 years forward, replace Dell with Samsung and Windows with Android, and they're blaming like Android 14 on the lack of, you know, smartphone sales. It's like the old Tim Cook doctrine. You've got to own the stuff that you use. And as a school IT person, I'm not in the business of like wanting to try to integrate 1,000 different things together. Like I want to be able to like seamlessly have stuff just work.
Yeah. And it's not necessarily that you can't ever use something from another company. I mean, we're very successfully using Google Drive on iOS. for one particular task. But see, to your point about integration, that was an integration job that I did. It wasn't something that necessarily just worked. I had to kind of, you know, put the idea together, train people, figure out how it all worked together, and then we could use it, you know. So in some ways, you know, if you think about iTunes U, for example, as another case, you know, if you've only got 30% of your kids on iOS devices and 30% on Android and, you know, the rest on the rest, you can't ever use iTunes U because it's not accessible to other people on other platforms, you know. And even if you split it with mostly either, you know, if you settle on Google services that work well in iOS, then what about the two kids who've got a Windows mobile device? So there's always that issue. And when I was talking about that, I kind of described that as a school uniform problem. My understanding is that not that many American schools have school uniform, but it's a big thing in the UK and it's a big thing here in South Africa as well. And this point resonated with a lot of the schools I spoke to, which was that the argument for wearing school uniform was always that, you know, you wanted it to be that the kids who couldn't afford the latest gear, and by gear they meant trainers and clothes and designer clothes and so on, you didn't want them to feel out of place in a school where the cool kids and the rich kids had the best equipment. So everybody wore the same, so nobody knew who was rich and who was poor, right? And, you know, I didn't like that argument when I was 14, but I get the point now as an adult. And I think one of my big concerns with BYOD is that you're basically throwing out the rule book on that argument. So the argument that kids who can't afford the best trainers get stigmatized because they can't afford it, but now if you're allowing BYOD into your school, then you're going to have a bunch of kids who've got the latest iOS devices every year, and then you've got a bunch of kids who've got, you know, something from the second tier, you know, Galaxy S3 or something that's a couple of years old, and then you've got a bunch of kids who've got something that their parents bought at Toys R Us. And then, of course, you're going to have one kid who's got like an Amazon Kindle, right? You know, a e-ink Kindle, because their parents didn't understand what the school meant when they said device. So to me, that's one of my really big concerns, is that if you let this come into your school, you're suddenly introducing a whole lot of class divisions, essentially. And I don't just mean that in socioeconomic terms, but just you're creating different groups of users who will have different experiences of school IT because of the choices their parents made, essentially, not their own problems. So that was what I was kind of terming the school uniform problem in my presentation. And I know that resonated with a lot of people. And of course, there's always, at the lowest end of the scale, for those kids whose parents really can't afford a device, the sort of hand-wavy argument always goes, well, the school can lend them a device. But if you think about it, the experience of being lent a device every day by the school versus having your own device with you all the time is a radically different proposition. It's not anything like the same. So that was another reason why we decided not to go BYOD, and I think we're right on that.
Yeah, I think if you're going to do it, and because we've got some schools here that are doing it, but I think you've got to set a baseline, and you've got to say, "Look, you can bring your own device, and we have that program. It's a BYOI, bring your own iPad."
Yeah.
But we want you to have an iPad 4 with 32 gigabytes Wi-Fi only. Like, that's what you have to bring. Like that is, in that way, everybody has roughly the same device.
Yeah.
And you know, and that way there is no division, because like we have a school uniform, we don't provide it. The parents have to buy it, mm-hmm. but we dictate what they. Like you have to go to this store, and these are what you can pick from.
Yeah, and I think it's. I mean, you could even say, well, you can bring anything that runs iOS 7. You know, you could cut it as simply as that, because I'm not religious about who owns a device. Like, I don't think every deployment has to be that the school leases a whole set just exactly like we did, but I do think the commonality is important. And if you look at a lot of the studies that come out about iPad or other one-to-one deployments that are managed by the institution, one of the things you often see is that people, teachers in particular, are very keen on the idea that everybody has the same thing, so they can depend on it and they can plan on top of it. because I sort of say this to people sometimes, well, bring your own device is fine if you get to bring your own curriculum and your own assessments as well. But we don't have that. Right? We have a consistent set of things.
Well, I think it's like if you have a class that some students have paper textbooks and some have digital, it's like, okay, it's page 50 in your book, but it's page 47 in your book. And it's just like you just need to have that consistent experience because, again, going back to our sponsor, the Stop Getting IT Wrong book, that technology is meant to enhance learning. It's not the be-all, end-all of learning, just as a textbook was not the be-all, end-all of learning. Ultimately, the teacher is our best asset. All these things are just to help, and this is to augment and just enhance and help engage students. And so as soon as technology becomes like a hindrance, like in the teachers having to worry about, well, this lesson is going to require iOS 7 and little Johnny has an iPad that runs only on iOS 5 because it's the first iPad. And then the teacher's having to make arrangements. And no, like it needs to be simple.
It does. It does. And you've basically led into the next point I was going to make, which is that, you know, you and I do an integration job for our schools. And that takes us time. And it takes us effort. And it's effort that other teachers don't put in because we do the job for them. And what BYOD sort of purports to do is to give you a free pass to a one-to-one deployment for low cost and for no effort. Because the kids will just bring it and they'll somehow make it work because, as we know, the kids are great with computers and teachers are not, which I think is another discussion for another day. But the point is that integration cost doesn't go away. When you go BYOD, what you end up doing is you end up basically charging that integration cost to every member of your staff. Because like you said, Bradley, they have to now be aware of the possibility that they maybe have, you know, 4 Windows PCs, 3 Mac laptops, maybe 15 iPads, 8 Samsung tablets, 2 other tablets, 1 completely unknown tablet, a Kindle Fire, a BlackBerry, and something else, right? And my question to the head teachers that I spoke to and the deputy heads that I spoke to this week was, are you sure that your teachers are ready to handle that? Because I don't know about your school, Bradley, but I know in my school and I know in a lot of other schools, our teachers are simply not capable of managing that complexity. So that to me that's essentially a deal breaker, is that you just can't afford the integration cost to show up in every class that you have throughout the whole year.
Here's a good example of something I dealt with twice today. Two teachers plugged up the laptops to a projector, and the first time they plugged them up this year, and it's got our new Airs, and they went to basically presenter mode in the displays. So they call me and say, hey, like our computer's not working with our projector. And you go in there and you see like the default mountain lion background on the projector, and you realize like it's in basically presenter mode with the projector. So I showed them how to change it to, you know, mirroring. But again, that's the stuff like teachers don't want to deal with, even things like that. So when you try to even say you have to design your lessons around the types of devices that students have, it's just going to fail. I mean, there's just no way around it. I had an email once. A parent was telling me about a school that they had toured out west, and they were like kind of comparing schools. And they asked the schools like, well, I mean, what do you guys do for technology? So, kids can bring stuff if they want to. And to me, that's like saying, well, kids can bring pencils if they want to. And what does the teacher do if the kids don't bring in pencils? I mean, I don't know. And so what happens when, I mean, we laugh, but it's really the same thing, because a pencil is just a tool in the classroom. And just as technology is a tool in the classroom. And if the teacher can't do lesson planning and can't guarantee that every student will have a pencil and a piece of paper, how does that affect their lesson plan? And it's the same thing with technology. If they're having to think like, I mean, you just end up having to do it to the lowest common denominator, which that doesn't allow you to take advantage of some of this amazing technology. You know, we talked about the A7 processor and a true BYOD deployment. That doesn't matter.
Yeah. That confers you no power whatsoever, except that your Safari might render faster. Because what happens when you have no commonality across platforms, and then you have no commonality across applications either, because, of course, with BYOD, you have to account for the possibility that even though most of the mainstream apps might, like, you know, Kindle app, for example, is on Android and iOS and Mac and PC. There's going to be a platform eventually that shows up in your classroom that it's not on. So what you end up having to do is you basically end up making a huge bet. And people who are going BYOD, I think, are making a big bet. And the big bet is essentially that the web will become as good an application platform as iOS or Android very soon. HTML5, basically. Betting the farm in HTML5. Because if you have no commonality, you have to build a platform above all the platforms, and that becomes your baseline. So I think when you scratch the surface of these BYOD deployments, and you don't have to often scratch very hard, basically what you find is that everybody's going on the web. And the school's maybe bought into some system on the web where everybody does that thing or whatever it is. But essentially, it's just everybody's on the web. And to me, that in 2013, that's just not good enough. Because these tools have got so much potential that to go out and buy an A7 based, I mean, because what you'll end up with is, you know, some parents will just massively overbuy if that's all you're asking them to do. So if you say to me, I want you to provide your child with a device that can just go on our courseware, then, you know, what device am I going to buy? Am I going to just play it safe and buy the most expensive thing that's fastest and newest? Or am I going to buy the cheapest thing, or do I buy somewhere in between? I mean, there was recently a report in the UK that said that packed lunches should be banned because parents don't know how to make a good packed lunch for their children. To which my comment was, well, you know, if we can't trust parents to make a packed lunch, how can we seriously be asking them to specify a computing device for their child's education? They just don't know enough to do that correctly. And schools who are saying BYOD are probably not giving them enough direction to make a good choice either. So that's a number of my concerns. And I think, because at the end of the day, the next thing that's going to happen, Bradley, is that if you say, well, I can deliver you a more or less one-to-one program for basically no increase in my budget, then, or even a decrease in my IT budget, then what happens is the head teacher takes that budget and they go and buy a new school minibus, right? And that's a 5-year lease, and good luck ever getting that money back if your BYOD program doesn't work out. So I have just so many concerns about BYOD that I just think it's a crazy idea. And I think that I find it incredibly frustrating. I don't find it really frustrating because, you know, with 5 minutes of discussion, you can just convince people that it doesn't make sense. But it's funny how it's an idea that has gained traction, and almost because that's the only way that nobody has to have an argument, right? Because if you say, well, we should go iPad or we should go Android, then you've got somebody arguing for something else. Whereas if you go BYOD, then we can all be friends and nobody has to make a decision. And to me, that's concerning.
We don't do a bring your own textbooks. We don't do a bring your own baseball uniform or football uniform. Like, I mean, we just, it's the same. It's really the same thing. It's a consistent experience. We tell the students what textbook to buy, or we provide it for them. We tell them what uniform to buy, or we provide it for them. It's the same thing.
Yeah. And as a teacher, I mean, at the end of the day, as a teacher, I could not contemplate taking responsibility for delivering a result in my classroom based on an environment that I don't know what it is. I can't predict it. I've got no control over it. I've got no ownership over it. And it's just constantly changing as well. I mean, the only thing that could be worse is that it could be on fire at the same time. Because, I mean, the other problem is, Bradley, that everybody gets a new device for their birthday. So not only do you walk up on day one, a completely heterogeneous set of hardware and software for that matter, and you've got to somehow make that work. And even if you do manage to make that work, then, you know, next week somebody comes in with a BlackBerry Q5. And it's like, well, suddenly, well, what's a BlackBerry Q5 when it's at home? You know, and you've got to work that out and, you know, revise all your plans to make sure it works on the BlackBerry Q5 as well. And then, you know, just think about it for a minute and think about what you're talking about. And I think a serious sit down and a think about it shows that it's not an idea that's going to, I don't think it has a future as a serious strategy for IT deployment in schools, unless the web suddenly gets much, much, much better than it is at the moment. And HTML5 is good for some things, don't get me wrong, but I'm not seeing anything like GarageBand or iMovie getting built in HTML5 right now, at least to any level of similar quality and performance to what you have on these native devices. So yeah, that's my 50-minute rant on BYOD.
Well, I agree. I mean, I think the analogy or the test you do is replace it with anything else in your school. Do you bring your own desk? Do you bring your own textbooks? Bring your own curriculum? I mean, again, you said that earlier, bring your own curriculum. No, it's not how it works. Like it falls apart. When you really analyze it, it's a cop-out, and it's the simplest thing to do, but it's the simplest thing to do up front, but ultimately just causes a lot of complexity and frustration.
Yeah, it's very intuitively appealing. And it's particularly intuitively appealing, unfortunately, to people who don't really know that much about technology. Because, I mean, too often, in my opinion, what you hear teachers say is, well, the kids are amazing on computers and they're so much faster than teachers are and they always know more than teachers. I'm kind of like, well, you wouldn't be okay with that if it was English, right? You wouldn't say, like, kids know so much more about Shakespeare than their English teachers. Isn't that a great thing? And therefore, the kids should just bring whatever book they want. But I'm glad to have had this conversation out here this week. And it's been interesting to hear, nobody's come to me and said, we like BYOD for all these reasons. What they've you put their hand up and said is, our school's thinking of BYOD. I'm not sure why. What do you think about it? And it's not that, there's a couple of good reasons that people have come up with, but not very many. And too often, it's kind of, I think it's sort of come to be seen as the default choice. When you don't have anybody in the school who's particularly championing any particular path, that we'll just do BYOD because we're not really sure what else to do. It's certainly not all schools, and there are some people who have thought BYOD through and come to the conclusion that it can work for them. But those programs are certainly in their infancy, and I think it will be interesting to see how this discussion pans out. I'm not a fan. I'm not convinced by it at all. The point I want to finish with, Bradley, is that just because I'm not a fan of BYOD, that's not the same thing as saying everybody should get an iPad, right? Because what consistently comes through from teacher experience and studies is that it's commonality that's most important. And you'd be better off with all Chromebooks, let's say, than 50-50, or a mixture of things in the classroom, let's say. So I think it's a topic whose time has come, and hopefully it's a topic whose time is about to go as well. And I guess we'll just track it and see where it goes from here.
I'm tired.
I'm exhausted and I'm a little cranky, as you can probably tell.
Yeah, this is your get mad episode. I had mine. You deserved yours.
Yeah. And I mean, it's been a great week. It's been super busy. I've done two presentations a day for the entire week. So I have said all the words. But it's been a great trip. And it's been fascinating to engage with people and hear what they're thinking here and, you know, talk to them about what I think about certain things and then hear from them what they think about certain things. And this is just one topic out of many. This isn't by far not the only thing that we've talked about this week, but it's something that is gaining a certain amount of traction here in South Africa. And it's been interesting to try and talk people into another way of seeing these things that's not just, hey, it's a free one-to-one program. So that's me. Fraser out.
All right, well, I guess drop the mic and go to bed.
Drop. Yeah, well, the bed is just inches from my desk here, so that's not going to take very long. But
I got about 5 hours left of my day before I get to even go home and listen to my newborn scream. So
that's still a thing.
Reflux. Now, solve one problem and get another one. But yeah, anybody here that's got parents, you know how it is.
Been there.
It's like one of those, like, you just, do you turn it? It's like, at what point in the middle of the night do you just call it and turn the coffee on? And for me, it's like, if it's past 3:30, we just like, well, we're up.
Yep. Yeah. My previous job, we used to have a protocol, which was that because like two of the three people who worked in the office had young children at the time, and we said, you know, whichever one of us came in and we'd had a really rough night with the kids, we would say, like, you do all the root access work on the servers today and I'm just not touching it. And we would take shifts on it depending on who had the worst night with their kids. So that's a very useful protocol. All right.
So I guess that's the show this week.
Yep, let's wrap it up here before the hotel cuts me off the internet. Find another 1,000 rand to keep going.
Thank our sponsors real quick again, Jamf Software and Stop Getting IT Wrong book. We'll have links to both of them in the show notes, so be sure to thank our sponsors for keeping the lights on here at Out of School Headquarters.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We shall talk to you again next week.
Have a good week.